Tonight we're going to be looking at the problem of evil. From the time we were children, we said, or we heard it said, that's not fair. And then sometimes a parent would come in and say, life's not fair. Well, that's not a great deal of comfort, but it becomes a part of our philosophy. Without knowing it, without even recognizing it, we can formulate the same issue, the same observation, with a question. Why do bad things happen to good people? And why do good things happen to bad people? There's nothing new with this. In the book of Habakkuk, I want to read a few verses out of chapter 1, verse 2. O Lord, how long shall I cry for help, and you will not hear? Or cry to you, violence, and you will not save? Why do you make me see iniquity, and why do you idly look at wrong? Destruction and violence are before me, strife and contention arise. The law is paralyzed, and justice never goes forth. For the wicked surround the righteous, so justice goes forth perverted. It's no insight that the world carries a great deal of injustice. It holds, it has, it seems almost to produce a great deal of injustice. The injustice that Habakkuk describes in chapter 1 is an injustice that was proliferated under the reign of Jehoiakim, one of the sons of maybe the last just king, Josiah. And whereas Josiah had been incredibly just, Jehoiakim was incredibly unjust. He made his wealth off the backs of his people. And to make matters worse, all of those under his authority did the same. So the culture was one of injustice. Socially, economically, in every way. And today we see the same kind of thing. And the question is often raised, if God exists, how can evil exist? Now let me formulate the argument. This is number one, Matt. Let me formulate the argument, if I may. It can be presented in several different ways, but I want to formulate it in a simple way. There's going to be two premises and one conclusion. Two premises and one conclusion. Premise number one. If God is all good, He will seek to alleviate evil. Premise number one. If God is all good, He will seek to alleviate evil. The word for all good, the theological word for all good, is omnibenevolent. Omnibenevolent. So, if God is omnibenevolent, He will seek to eliminate evil. Premise number two. If God is all-powerful, He can eliminate evil. Now the theological term for all-powerful is the term omnipotent. Okay? So the premises together go like this. If God is all good, He will seek to eliminate evil. If God is all-powerful, He can eliminate evil. However, evil exists. Therefore, and here's the conclusion, an all-powerful and or all-benevolent God does not exist. Now, there are variations of this argument, but that's the nutshell of the argument. Does everybody understand that? Or are there any questions about it? Okay. Premise number one, and actually this is premise 1A and B. Here's premise 1A and B. If God is benevolent or good, if He's all good, He will seek to eliminate evil. Premise 1B. If God is all powerful, He can eliminate evil. Premise number two, evil exists. And the conclusion is, therefore, that kind of God, an omnibenevolent or an all-powerful God, one or the other, doesn't exist. Or God Himself doesn't exist. No God exists. So this is probably, I would say, the strongest argument against the existence of God. It's almost a universal argument against the existence of God. There is no argument that you're more likely to be confronted with than this argument. Just a quick question. So if I was doing a questions at the end, I would put this in the questions at the end for you to answer. Has anyone ever discussed this with you as one of their concerns about the idea that God exists? Maybe not hostily.
I think, Pastor, the question always comes up, well, if God exists, why did He permit this? Why did He allow this?
Okay. Say it's the same question. Yes. It's the same question. Because it supposes these two premises. It supposes these two premises. Now, if we can defeat either or both of the premises, then the argument fails. Okay? And let me address some of the problems with this argument. First of all, the question or the conclusion that God doesn't exist because evil does exist still doesn't explain why evil is present in this world. The issue is evil. It is the presence of evil that is the argument against God. But the argument using the presence of evil as a basis for the conclusion that there is no God still doesn't explain evil. In other words, the atheist is confronted with exactly the same issue that the theist is confronted with. And that is, evil exists in this world. Now the second problem is that while Stay right here. This portion of the premise, if God is all-powerful, as well as this portion of the premise, Those are both true. God is omnibenevolent, all good. And God is omnipotent, all powerful. Does it follow that these statements are therefore true? Does it follow that He would not want anyone to suffer? Just because God is good and loving, all good and all loving, does it follow necessarily? I mean, by an order of necessity, does it follow that He would not want anyone to suffer? Some say yes, some say no.
Pastor, I think a good example that God gave us is Job.
Job is an example of it.
That he told us that He allowed him to suffer. He allowed him to lose his children. But He's still an all-loving and all-powerful God.
But you can understand the question in the midst of suffering. You see, there are two. This is, we're going to take a slight detour. The truth of the matter is you have an intellectual problem and you have an emotional problem. And if we deal with the intellectual problem alone and the emotional problem is not addressed, we're cold and callous. If we deal with the emotional problem and not the intellectual problem, then we're shallow and trite. So there is a kind of a mental side of this issue, and then there's a heart or a spiritual side of this issue, and both of them have to be addressed. Our primary aim is the intellectual side tonight, but I want you to understand that both sides exist, and they're equally important. Now, God is all-powerful, and He can stop suffering, but it does not make it necessary that He would stop all suffering. That He can doesn't mean He will. Even if He's all powerful. Let me give you an example, if I may. And I think most of you will agree. Maybe not all, but I think most would agree with this. Parents allow some suffering in their children in order to what? Teach a lesson, mature them, safety. Now, I pose the question, can good people bring suffering into the world? I mean, good people. How many of you are old enough to remember going to a dentist before Novocaine? Some of you may be. I doubt if anybody liked it.
Some dentists even are bad with Novocaine. The one in McGregor, I tried to get to come to church. That guy could have killed me.
He needed to be saved. Maybe he would have gotten sweeter. So let's define the term evil. Let's define the term evil. Where are we? Go to number two real quick. The problem. This is what I just addressed. Go ahead. We've done that. Let's go to three. The term evil. We need to clarify what we mean. If this is the problem, then we need to we need to know what it is. In the broadest sense, we can say that evil can be defined as that which is not good or any act that causes negative consequences. But even that's too broad to be useful. So we're going to divide evil into two categories. One category we will call natural evil. Natural evil. And natural evil would include, and not be limited to, of course, physical catastrophes, like tornadoes. Maybe in Maui. We may find out somebody set a fire. How do we know? But wildfires. Let's just include wildfires in there. Earthquakes. Volcanoes. Cancer. Heart disease. Diabetes. COVID-19. And you know, many of these events are called in your insurance actuary.
Acts of God.
The second category we'll label moral evils. Moral evils. And that will refer to acts of people against other people, like physical violence, political oppression, war, criminal activities, murder, child abuse, rape, torture. We hear about these things and we ask the question, how can people treat other people so badly? Any comments? Would anybody like to answer that question?
Your sin nature.
Sin, okay. But some do and some don't. Those horrible deeds. Well, I wonder what atheism says to these questions. How does atheism handle these questions? Actually, atheism has a whole lot more to answer to than theism or Christianity in particular. Think of some of these atheist leaders. Kim Il-sung killed upwards of 1.6 million of his own people who opposed his rule. Pol Pot, leader of the Communist Party of Cambodia, in an attempt to cleanse his country, killed somewhere between 1.7 and 2.5 million people. Actually, a little over a third of his country's population. One of the most well-known atheist leaders in history is Adolf Hitler, the Führer. And this Führer subscribed to Friedrich Nietzsche's philosophy, God is dead, and killed upwards of 10 million people following that philosophy. Many people think it was higher than that. But two others. Joseph Stalin. Stalin was the secretary of the Communist Party and was at one time the leader of the Soviet Union. And he is attributed to up to 23 million deaths.
It's actually closer to 49 million. He's the greatest serial killer of all time.
Actually, he takes second place to Mao Zedong. 66 million people. Now, how does atheism answer it? In the 20th century alone, just that one 100-year period, atheists have been directly responsible for over 150 million unwarranted, unjustified deaths. And it didn't stop in the 20th century. I'm just talking about that one century picture. Christianity has existed for 2,000 years. And I'm going to answer for Christianity shortly, or try to anyway. But Christianity has been responsible for deaths as well. But the numbers don't anywhere near compare, not to justify any deaths. The Inquisition, responsible for about 5,000 deaths. The Crusades, there were 8 in total. Approximately 1.5 million people through those 8 Crusades were killed. The Salem witch trials, 19 deaths. And these are the cases where Christianity was the motivation, albeit misguided, the motivation for the evil. So added all up, those 3 major events, a little over 1.5 million compared to 150 million over a single period of 100 years. They don't compare. But it should be recognized that while Christianity is not as violent as some people portray it, the deeds done were still evil. Those types of activities that profess to hold the Christian faith while acting counter to the Christian faith should be wholeheartedly condemned. Wholeheartedly condemned. Now let's go back. Where are we? Not all the way back. No, not back. Go back to our outline. Go back to our outline. Just leave the major outline up there.
Hey, Robert.
Yes.
Would those deaths include what happened in the Old Testament?
No. Christianity didn't exist in the Old Testament. God did. I know, I live with it. And usually I just don't pay attention to it, but sometimes I have to, David.
Yeah.
Like when she asks it in front of people, then I have to answer.
But I mean, the Lord did tell, for example, Israel to wipe out certain nations completely.
He did. He did. Let's go all the way back, not just to those deeds. Let's go all the way back to creation. Could God have created a world where no evil did or could exist? Maybe. Maybe. Suppose, however, that God saw the highest good reflected in a creation, a created you and me, who could voluntarily love Him the way He loved us. I mean, let's face it, guys. If you found out that your mother was paying your girlfriend $500 a month to go out with you, you wouldn't value that relationship very much, would you? And we wouldn't value a relationship with God where we had no choice but to respond to Him as He deemed necessary or willful. So, I'm going to ask the question again. Could God have created a world where no evil existed nor could exist while also creating people who have free will?
Well, you already had the problem with Lucifer and a third of the angels.
There was already some will, obviously, there was already some will allowed, wasn't there? But we can't get off the hook by saying, well, it's the devil's fault because God still created the devil, right? So some would say the evil is attributable to God. And frankly, I will argue that ultimately the true, consistent Calvinist ultimately puts the blame for evil on God. Because God is sovereign and in total control, even control over the will of people. And they will use verses in the Bible to demonstrate that. Now, I'm not belittling it. I see it as a weakness, however, in the Reformed position. A great weakness, not only from the standpoint of logic, but from the standpoint of biblical revelation, which is more important. Now then, the fact that God created people with free will, did that guarantee evil would exist?
The potential was there.
The potential. But the question is, did God actualize that potential? Or did we actualize that potential? Because something's possible doesn't mean it's necessary. I want to ask y'all a question. What do you say is the likelihood that there is an elephant in this room right now?
Zero.
You think there's no likelihood? Let's talk about it in terms of probabilities. Do we know everything? We see a lot here, don't we? But do we know everything? Could there be some drop of rain that fell down with an embryo of an elephant? And somebody carried it, well, it wouldn't be water, would it? It wouldn't be rain, because it hadn't rained in a while. You get what I'm saying? Based upon our observations, I think we would all agree it's improbable that there's an elephant in the room. Not impossible, but highly improbable. Would we agree with that?
Yes.
What about carbon-14? Carbon-14 is a radioactive isotope. What do you think about the probability of that? Actually, it's far more likely. Far more likely. We can't see it. We can't see either one. But what I'm getting at is there is a grand issue of probabilities. We've already talked about probabilities. We've talked about probabilities in terms of the fine-tuning of the universe. Probabilities matter. It is so improbable that there is an elephant in this room that common sense would say there's no elephant in this room. But the probability of carbon-14 is so high that we would be justified in saying it is very likely carbon-14 exists in this room. Go Google it. You'll find out. It exists. It exists everywhere. So therefore, it's likely that it exists in this room. I could have used carbon-12. Carbon-12, the most prolific carbon isotope in existence. It's everywhere. You make it. You are it. Another way of saying it. It's, by the way, it's the basis of the weighting or the how you weigh every chemical element, because it is so stable. 6 protons, 6 neutrons, 6 electrons. Always. Never changes. Now, I've simply said all of that to come back to this. To come back to these questions. Evil exists in this world. Some people would try to answer this question by arguing evil does not exist in this world. It is a figment of our imagination. The Hindus, the Buddhists, Christian Science will say evil does not exist. But evil does exist. And some of you experience it, are experiencing it right now, and if not, be prepared, you will experience it. All of us have experienced evil. We've seen it, we've been victimized by evil, and perhaps we've perpetrated evil ourselves, but it is self-evident that evil exists. Now, others will say, that God could have made a world where not so much evil exists. In other words, there exists unnecessary evil. Now, I mean, how could any evil be necessary? Can you think of any way that evil could be necessary? Well, I just used the example of a dentist. That's pain, that's suffering. But it's necessary.
Some of those wildfires are necessary to help regroup.
There are ways to look at it, but the wildfire causes suffering, loss of property, loss of life, on and on. So is some of that just an overabundance of evil? Is there an overabundance of evil? Is there somehow unnecessary evil in this world? It certainly seems it, doesn't it? Yeah, I mean, how many of you would like to see less evil in this world? Just raise your hand. Okay, you're not God. Listen to me. To say that there is too much evil in this world is to jump to the conclusion that we can see from a divine perspective, that we can see eternally, that we can recognize superfluous evil at a glance. But most often, what we are seeing is our own preference, because we can't see from a divine perspective. The commandments that God gave to Joshua as they entered the land, those commandments were harsh. They were harsh. They were radical. And God was serious. He was not flying off the handle. He was serious about those commandments to purge the land of everything. And it was early on in the captivity of Jericho, or in the defeat of Jericho, there was the taking by Achan and his family of some of the wealth, some property that should have been destroyed. And how serious was God about that? That he had Achan and his family and all of his children and grandchildren, nieces and nephews, all of his livestock annihilated. Was that superfluous evil? And we can say yes, it seems to be unnecessary. Again, we're not God. And it appears that God had a different value system than we do. He valued the honor and respect of his people even more than he valued human life. Now, we can't think of a value higher than human life, can we? It's difficult. It's difficult. But as valuable as human life is, God may and seems to value some things more than human life. For instance, your salvation. Your salvation. Someone died for your salvation. And not just someone. God Himself. Think about that. So when we deal with this question, we have to be understanding. The question can be raised intellectually in the midst of an emotional crisis over the very thing. Childhood cancer is awful. It's inexplicable. And if one deals only with the intellectual aspect of this issue, they will not be dealing with all of the problem. But people ask deep questions in painful moments. And it's necessary that we are able to strike the balance in answering those questions. Very few people think about this until they're confronted with unavoidable evil. Now, by evil, I've described two kinds, moral evil and natural evil. Okay? And among natural evil, illness, disease, that sort of thing. Are there any questions? Yes, sir.
You know, I've had the question by non-believers presented to me many times, that how can a God that's omnipotent, omniscient, an all-loving God show the wrath that he's shown in the Old Testament, and also, as it says in the Bible, be a jealous God? So, well, how can a God be that and show such petty emotions as jealousy?
Well, in his commandment regarding idols, he identifies himself as a jealous God. And the answer to the question is very simply, if someone were trying to wedge in between you and your spouse, would jealousy be an honorable disposition? And that's exactly what God views idols as. It's something wedging between his creation and him. He's a jealous God. With respect to the evil that we see, the harshness of the God described in the Old Testament, and by the way, it's the same God in the New Testament. People who don't think that have not read the book of Revelation. Plain and simple. It's the same God. And he deals the same way with sin. With sin. So, that's what we have to recognize. We think from our position of judgment, which is the only position we can have. We can't take a position we don't have. We're not divine. We don't see eternity. From our position, we think we could do a better job than is being done if this God exists who's all-loving and all-powerful. But if we were all-knowing, like God is, then there may be justification, good out of evil. Paul talked about it in Philippians. You planned it for evil, God planned it for good.
Joseph did that too. You meant it for evil, but God meant it for good.
Right. And in Romans 8:28, we know all things work together, not for everybody, but for those who love God and are called according to his purpose. Why do bad things happen to good people? Well, bad things happen in this world. It can turn out for good for those who love God and are called according to his purpose. So why do they happen? Maybe for the good. Go back and read James chapter 1. Count it all joy, brothers, when you fall into or step into various manifold tests. Trials is the term. Translated King James, temptations. But it's about trials.
This is what Ron Bryson dealt with in the early book.
You know, interesting you should say that about his book. Walk On was the name of his book. I was in a used bookstore yesterday, and I like to go through the books, and there was one of his books, and it was signed by the author. And if I didn't already own one that was signed by the author, I'd have bought that one, but I thought, no, somebody needs that book. You know, somebody's going to need that book. And I wondered, you know, The awful experience in Ron's life, some of you may or may not know. You know, he had a son who died in Afghanistan, a pilot. And Ron was a pilot, as I recall. And this wounded him, a wound that he carried with him until his death. It hurt. He never understood it. And I don't know that I would ever understand anything like that. There's no way in our process that we can handle a child's death. We can handle, intellectually, I would say, the death of someone older than us, but not younger than us. And especially a parent. But anyway, I don't want to belabor this. By the way, I haven't solved the problem. I've just addressed the question. Okay?
So would you, in a discussion, contend then that every evil, has its place and is necessary to bring about God's plan ultimately?
It depends on where I am in that conversation. It would depend on where I am. If I'm in the counseling situation with someone who's just learned horrific news about themselves or a loved one, I probably wouldn't jump there.
Right.
I know I wouldn't jump
just
there.
A general philosophical discussion.
But in a general philosophical discussion, I would use the probability issue. I would use the probability argument. From what I know about God, and I know some of what I know about Him from the universe, y'all don't ever forget, you not only have this special revelation, you have the general revelation of this universe, and it shows you something about God. In fact, it's enough to judge you for eternity. That's how much there is to be known in the general world, what we call general revelation. It's based on general revelation that you're condemned. Did you know that? People say, well, it's what you did with Jesus. No, it's not. It's what you did with the revelation God gave you. Maybe you never heard of Jesus. If you don't believe that, go read Romans 1 all over again. It's there. So, I would use the argument of probabilities from what I know about God. I know He's all loving. I know He's all good. I know He's all powerful. I don't know about God that He would prefer a world with no suffering. I don't know that. I have no proof of that. None whatsoever. I know He has different values than I have. Even if you're not a Christian or a monotheist, I think you can see value in evil if you just look. If there was no evil in this world, there'd also be no courage and no altruism. There'd be no charity. Are you with me? I'm just saying, based on probabilities, I would say I can't conclude that all evil or some evil is superficial. But we want to make sense of it. We want to make sense of it. But how can we? How can we? That would be akin to taking my value system, which is to value human life in what I call flourishing. What I call flourishing, some might call joy or happiness. But is that what God calls flourishing? Is that what God calls flourishing? Maybe God considers flourishing like He described in Romans 8, you know, where it says all that about all things working together for good. Just keep reading. It also says that all these things are working together to conform us to the image of Christ. Not to our comfort, not to our liking, but to our conformity to the image of Christ. So, my value system is not God's value system. And it is a big step from my perspective to God's perspective. Isaiah said that. I believe it was Isaiah who said, "As the heavens are above the earth, so are my thoughts above your thoughts. My ways above your ways." Okay. Yes, sir. Text. Without evil? Oh, that's a good question. I just now thought about it. Perhaps not. I don't know. Perhaps not. Well, isn't death an aging? Just take all other evil out of the way. Aren't you still going to die? Nobody has to kill you. Just wait. Just outlive you. They'll see you die. That's what my mentor told me about pastoring. He said, "The secret to pastoring is marrying your followers, marry them, do their weddings, get involved in their lives, and bury your detractors. Just stay there long enough to bury your detractors." I don't know if that's right or not. Seemed a little bit rough, but that's kind of the way he was. Any other comments, questions?
You know, Brother, in Romans it says that good's going to overcome evil. And then after the millennium, the new heavens and new earth, eternity, there'll be no evil. Because Jesus is going to deal with it.
And think about this. In the concept of time, which is hard for us to frame because we are within time. We think in seconds, minutes, hours, days, weeks, months, years. We don't even think in centuries, folks. And the reason we don't is we're a young country. Our culture just typically doesn't think in terms of centuries. I was telling my mother-in-law the other day how old she was. I said, "You do realize you were born in the early 1900s. Like that was a statement, you know. Now she tells everybody that. Well, you know you were born in the 1900s. We just can't. Our frame of reference is so limited to our experience that we can't make this correlation. Our space in time is just that. Soon, as the hymn writer said, time will be no more. Now, how would you fit that gap, that space? You can't. You can't. Because there is no way to fit a spatial thing in an unspatial thing. Time. Just consider that. Paul put it this way. He was an East Texan. He said, "I reckon that the present suffering of this life is not comparable, not to be compared with, the glory that will be revealed." So, the atheist has the same deal to deal with, the same evil. He can't explain it. And the reason he can't explain it is because he can't, literally can't, define evil. He has no frame of reference. He has no standard of measurement. Without a holy God, as we've already found out, there is no objective morality. There's only subjective morality. And what you think is right, I may think is wrong. So it's whatever makes me happy. So the atheist cannot address the issue of evil because when he attempts to define it, All you have to do is say, who says that's evil? You say it's evil, but you also say we are the product of chance. And if we're the product of chance, what reference does morality have in us? If we are nothing but a happenstance of mitochondria that formed at some point in a wherever, I can't even go there, but if it did, how is there anything right and anything wrong? Isn't that nihilism? It's pure nihilism. And the atheist has no answer because he or she can't even define evil. They will try, but you would just simply have to say, who says? Who says that's evil? Well, I say it's evil. Well, who are you? Are you the moral judge? Well, everybody says that's evil. No, not everybody. Somebody committed that evil. So obviously not everybody feels that way. Anyway, all right. I think I've beaten this dead horse a little too long. Let's pray. And we feel like Habakkuk, Lord, more often than not. And instead of with enthusiasm and excitement, we do it more in threatening when we cry out with John, even so, come, Lord Jesus. While we don't have your divine perspective, when we don't understand your ways, what you have revealed to us gives us hope. And it's the only thing we can find on this planet that does. And for that, we praise you. In Jesus' name, amen.